Hello, Sarah. Nice to meet you.
Jason, you too.
Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Sarah Silverman, who's coming to MGM National Harbor on Saturday, April 22nd. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us. This is an honor.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
They have an awesome new venue out there at National Harbor. It's a casino. Should our listeners get boozed up on the free casino booze before they see you and lose all their money first, or after they see you?
Do it after. I don't like drunk people. They scare me.
Awesome.
Actual phobia of drunk people. I'm the kind of semi-famous person where people feel like they know me, and that's nice, but when they're drunk, then they feel like they can, like, grab me. I'm just a little lady. I don't drink.
Oh, yeah.
I have a 10-year-old palate. It tastes terrible to me.
What can we expect from the show? I mean, you're going to be in D.C., so obviously that opens up a ton of political jokes.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. What can you expect? I don't know what I can say on this show, but it's, you know, I talk about family, masturbation, ejaculation, politics, the human condition, I guess.
I like how
that sounds good.
I like how it was in that order: family, masturbation, and then politics.
Yes, probably that's probably the right order as well.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I will definitely leave that in this pre-recorded version for the web with a disclaimer. But is there for the part that I run on our family-friendly radio station?
Oh, what? Sorry. What,
yeah, no. You're totally good. I'll leave that in the longer uncut version. But
what's the part that will get cut out? The masturbation. Or ejaculation.
Where they draw the line between those two, I think, will be the interesting tell, the telltale sign.
I hope masturbation stays, because it's not something people should be ashamed of. My dad says there are two kinds of people: people who masturbate and people who lie and say they don't masturbate.
There's no in between. What was the Woody Allen line? It's sex with someone I love. It's sex with someone I love. All right, well, what's a cleaner bite I can use on the radio? What can we expect? Put on your clean bite. What can we expect?
I don't have a clean well, it's not for children, and it's sometimes explicit, but I talk a lot about family, but that's explicit too.
Sometimes the most explicit. Awesome.
Truth. Don't bring your kids, because it's about truth.
I think somewhere between the dirty cuts and the cleans, we can actually make something out of this. So don't worry.
Oh, good. I'm worried.
All right. Well, take us how you got into comedy in the first place. So you were born in Bedford, New Hampshire. Who did you like growing up? Like, which comics did you sort of enjoy as a youngin?
I worshipped Steve Martin.
Of course.
I loved him so much. And then, of course, Woody Allen. My mom had a double album of Woody Allen, and we listened to that all the time. I loved Albert Brooks. All the people I still really admire. But Martin Short. You know, I like intellectual stuff, and I like regressively silly stuff. And I find that they combine often.
Absolutely. Did you ever have chance meetings where you actually got to meet some of these heroes later in life?
Yeah, I met Steve Martin and Martin Short, and I adore both of them.
That's so awesome.
And Albert Brooks.
Yeah, Albert.
Oh my God, what a life.
Albert Brooks is so effing
funny. My childhood me knew what my adulthood me would be. I would just...
Awesome. All right. Well, so you grew up, you know, loving all those guys and gals. And then how did you actually get, did you make your way down to New York and get into stand up around, I think it was like 92?
Oh, no. The first time I did stand up, I was 17 in Boston, because that was kind of like the closest city where I was, lived in New Hampshire, actually, southern New Hampshire.
Gotcha.
And then I finished high school, and then I moved to New York. And, I started, you know, working, passing out flyers for a club in New York called the Boston Comedy Club, and they'd give me stage time, and it just slowly, you know, I started passing at the clubs, and 93, you know, I quit college after my first year. My dad said, if you quit, I'll pay the next 3 years as if it's your sophomore, junior, senior year of your rent. That's like a great deal. College is so expensive, you know, and so...
So you had a 4-year deal regardless, whether it was college or not. You had a 4-year deal with that.
Yeah, but I mean, it is, you know, he knew, like, what I was doing. I didn't need a diploma, you know?
Sure.
So instead of paying for college, he paid my, you know, $350 a month rent and utilities.
Nice.
And by the time I would have graduated, I was writing for Saturday Night Live. But addendum, I was fired a year later. But I kept, you know, I from then on, I supported myself. So it worked out well. And I still got an education because I just stole classes from NYU, you know?
You just stole them and
they're all like, yeah, they're all big lectures. And I just went.
And now you're giving lectures, except they're funny lectures.
Yeah.
Awesome. You mentioned SNL and how it was sort of a brief, you said about a year. Why do you think, I think I saw some, was it Bob Odenkirk or someone back then saw a quote saying that he was like about you leaving the show and said it's because you had your own little voice and, you know, sometimes it doesn't always fit in that little, you know, square peg in a round hole or whatever. But what's your take on why you think that was a short marriage?
That's very generous of Bob, but I would say, you know, I wasn't, you know, I looked back on it. I kept all the sketches I wrote and I read them and they're not funny. I think it might have had something to do with that. I think I wasn't me yet, you know. I was very young and it was impressive that I got hired and I was very good at punching up. I don't think anyone who remembers me will deny that. That was my best kind of quality was I was really good on the Thursday nights when we punched up all the scripts. But
so you mean
besides that, I was young and I didn't have a whole lot to contribute at that point.
So you, when you're saying punching up, you mean sketches that were already written, you were really good at jumping in there and making them much better. Do you remember which ones you punched up? Any of the famous ones we know? No? All right.
I'm sure, but hundreds and hundreds. I mean, probably many. I guess not hundreds, but whatever, 20 shows worth of maybe just, you know.
Right.
But
well, did any of yours finally make the air?
No.
None?
Some that I co-wrote, some that I helped write, some that I co-wrote. Lots of individual jokes made it into sketches, and I would get jokes on Update a lot.
Right.
But no, my sketches weren't funny.
Do you remember any of the ones that you thought were funny at the time and now you look back and you're like,
they were like high concept. Phil Hartman was very generous and he had seen me do stand up and he said, write something for you and I to do together. No, you and me would be the correct. Okay, sorry. My mom is still in my head.
Right.
And I wrote this thing about how we were houseflies and because houseflies only live 24 hours. So he was like at the end of his life and I was young and he was like giving me advice as we sat on the wall watching a dog go to the bathroom in the house. And, but I don't remember like the jokes, but it was very like, I think it was written in the frame of like a masterpiece theater, you know, I don't know.
Right.
Very weird kind of stuff. Weird. Esoteric kind of.
Here comes high concept Sarah again.
like not bright high concept young kid stuff.
Well,
there's probably something there, but yeah.
Absolutely. Well, all the years later, you ended up getting the last laugh. You got your own show in 2007, Sarah Silverman program on Comedy Central. But what do you think? You know, take me sort of fill that the gap in between those two for me. Like, how did you? You know, I'm sure when you let go of SNL, you're like bummed for a while. So how do you pick yourself back up and build a successful stand up career to the point where you get your own freaking show?
Oh, it was a long road. You know, I mean, I got fired from Saturday Night Live, so I felt like, you know, worthless. And then I moved to LA, and I immediately booked a sitcom, and the day before we shot it, I got fired from that. And so that gave me a real complex that I was going to just always be fired. And so even when I was hired for things, I was constantly waiting to be fired from them. But I didn't, actually. And then I was able to hold on to jobs for a while, and I did all sorts of different jobs on shows. And, you know, I did like a Star Trek Voyager, and I did Seinfeld, and then I had a recurring role on Larry Sanders, and I was able to, you know, once I met Gary Shandling, he was a real mentor to me, and huge in my life, and I just, stand-up is always was always there for me. It was always something I could hone and you know, develop. And, you know, I love it. It's like who I am. I always say it's like kind of like being gay. Like you just, you're born that way. And if you either figure out you're a stand-up or you just think that something's wrong with you your whole life.
Right. And then you're just living a lie. So I'm glad you found out who you really were. Oh, that's great. Well, before we move on, you mentioned Seinfeld there. You were the Jimmy Legs. You were a girlfriend with the Jimmy Legs, right?
Yes.
You didn't think I would know that. Oh, dude.
I know you're a movie goo. I know you know movies, but I didn't know you knew sitcom.
Oh, absolutely. It's everything. No, memories of that real quick. What was it like working with him and, God, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, all those people? That must have been nuts.
It was great. It was, you know, I think that was, like, the most excited I ever have been from getting, like, a job from an audition. Like, I just couldn't believe it because Seinfeld was already, like, an institution. And I was actually Kramer's girlfriend. So all my scenes were with him. And it was really cool. It was, you know, I remember Jerry said I looked too young. I looked so young. I was so young, and I looked even younger. And they gave me like older woman hair and, you know, like soft curls. And, you know, I don't know how that works.
Do you save the older woman hair and bring it back later in life? And then you just bust that out, I guess. I guess you just get to keep it.
Now I warrant older woman hair, but I still just wake up and put a ponytail on my head and don't think about it.
That's so funny. What memories of Sarah Silverman program, though? Because it was a funny show, man. What was like the biggest joy of doing that, and also sort of the biggest challenge of it too?
Oh, the Sarah Silverman program was that we're all very close friends. Everyone who worked on it, we were either already best friends or we became best friends. But it was a group where, whenever we see each other now, we're like, oh no, is that going to be the happiest time of our lives? And did it already happen? But it was pure joy. And it just felt like being home. And my sister played my sister. My older sister played my younger sister. And, you know, just to be able to be together every single day was pure joy.
Yeah, especially getting to swap the older-younger dynamic. That must have been pretty fun with the six.
When I told her she was playing my younger sister, she was like, thank you. But everybody thinks she's younger than me, so I, oh.
It was the older woman hair, I think. That's what did it. It flipped it.
Yeah. nice.
All right. See, bringing it back. The old callback. That's a great one.
The old callback.
You can't go wrong with the old callback. I'm trying to think what else. You mentioned Seinfeld. Oh, yeah. God, I remember seeing you in, you started landing some movie roles, too, like School of Rock, Something About Mary. Real quick memories of those.
Oh, my gosh. Something About Mary was, I think, my first movie that, like, went into movie theaters. That was really fun. Farrelly Brothers are hilarious, and it was really good. School of Rock was so funny. It's funny when you play just like the bitchy girlfriend. Like, it was a little soul killing, but when I watched the movie, it's so good. And Jack is like, it's exactly him. You know, that's who he is. He's so special. But it was funny because, you know, like when you're shooting it, I'm making people laugh and being me, you know, and then you watch the movie and I'm just like this angry bitch, you know, character. And you go, oh, it's a little soul killing. But the movie is so good. And I was so happy to be a part of it.
No, we love to
hate. It's hard to like shake off the bitchy girlfriend role, the first girlfriend before the guy realizes what love can be.
Right,
that's
right.
Always like what the Jewish girls get, you know?
We'll get you some different roles. Don't worry. We love to hit you in that. You did your job well. That's awesome.
Thank you.
One other little thing before we bring it back to MGM National Harbor. I have to ask you, I'm blanking Matt Damon. That was a cultural phenomenon. You were hilarious.
Yeah.
How did that, I mean, when you get that pitch to you, do you just jump at it? Because you don't really shy away from things, but there's some. Take me into like the formation of that.
Well, at the time, Jimmy was we were boyfriend and girlfriend at the time, and he was having a birthday show where he didn't want to know what any of the content was. He wanted it to be all a birthday present to him, the guests, everything, all the stuff he loved. And he had been ending the show with, sorry, Matt Damon, we ran out of time, which I think he still does, you know.
Every show.
And at the time, Yeah, and at the time it was, now it's tradition and it has a whole new meaning, but at the time it was because, you know, his show was new and, you know, it was like his, the second guest on the show would be like the man with the longest arm hair, you know, like it was hard for it. So it was funny to say, oh, to the biggest movie star alive, like, sorry, we didn't get you on the show.
Right.
So, and Matt had come on and done some things on the show. And so a couple of the writers, Tony Barbieri and Sal, cousin Sal, had come up with this idea that I do a video and it ends up that I'm bleeping Matt Damon. And then it turned into a song. And then we all wrote the song. I was on tour and I went through Miami where Matt was living at the time. And the writers came down and the director, Wayne McClammy. And the night before, we just wrote the song and recorded it. And then the next morning, Matt came in, learned the song, recorded it in the closet of a hotel. And then that hotel let us shoot just all around the hotel. And we had 3 hours with Matt. He had a hard out at 11 a.m. or noon or something because he's such a great guy. And it was his daughter's Halloween pageant, and he wasn't going to be late for it. And he did the whole thing. It was amazing. He was so awesome. And then we never aired it. It just went on the shelf for a long time because the writer's strike happened. And then we pulled it out after the writer's strike. It was the 5-year anniversary of the show. So we did it for that. And it was still a surprise. He had no idea what it was. And I remember we were brushing our teeth in his dressing room, and Jimmy's like, I can't wait to see what you did. Everyone's saying I'm going to love it. And I go, I didn't know it would be. I just said, well, I mean, lower your expectations. It's just a funny video. You know, I didn't want him to be disappointed because he seemed to be all excited about it, but he right. loved it. And it was really exciting. And I think it was just kind of early enough in the days of the internet that it swept the
Yeah, one of those, the first viral videos, one of the first, yeah.
But it was good, it was really good. I saw it recently, and I was like, oh, that was so good.
Oh, it holds up. Oh, that's awesome.
It does, it kind of holds up.
Pun intended. But anyway, we really appreciate you. We appreciate you taking the time. I think I have an interview with the guy with the longest arm hair, or whatever you just said, coming up after you, so we got to let you go. But real quick, in closing, why should we come out on April 22nd? Second to National Harbor. What's the final sell?
Here's the final sell. I mean, come out if you think I'm your cup of tea. I don't know. Don't come if I'm not your thing. But, you know, it will be fun, I think. My Auntie Martha is coming, and she doesn't go to anything.
So
she's coming, and she's bringing all her friends.
So, yeah, there you go. If she can come, we can all come.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So just know that Auntie Martha will be in the audience, and so you might want to be there.
All right. We'll come just for Auntie Martha.
Yeah.
Awesome. Seriously, you are probably one of the funniest freaking people on the planet, so we thank you so much for joining us. Sarah Silverman on WTOP, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jason.
See you at the show.
All right, cool.